It's on, the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. Buy two select laundry appliances and get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop all things Maytag, including the new stackable Pet Pro laundry system that removes pet hair from clothes. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast with Tom Davis. This is an excellent podcast with, I think this is my new reactivity blueprint for sure. This is really going to help so many people. If you have a reactive dog, if you have a dog that has severe reactivity, this is step by step where you need to start, where you need to be in the end, and the reality of owning a reactive dog. I've worked with thousands of reactive dogs all over the world, and I know that this is going to be helpful for you guys. So enjoy this podcast. And as a reminder, I'm going to be on tour this year. Seattle is coming up, which I'm very excited about. Australia, New Zealand, England, New York, and we're going to Ontario this weekend. So all the tickets to see me live and come hang out with me and see all the action in person are linked in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. Number one dog training podcast. Enjoy this one. This is my new reactive blueprint for free for you. Chickity check.
Hello, this is Julie.
Hey, Julie, this is Tom. How are you?
Good. Hey, hang on. I can't hear you. Hold on. Hold.
Okay.
Let me turn up the volume. Can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. Okay. So I thought we were going to do FaceTime, but that's fine. This is fine.
We can FaceTime. It's totally up to you.
Yeah. This is fine.
Okay.
So my name's Julie and my husband's here, Dan.
Hello.
Hey, Dan.
And I found you through YouTube. I watched tons of your videos.
Awesome.
And so what I wanted to do was spend a little time with you talking about the situation we have with our dog and then getting your take on what we want from our dog, if it's reasonable or not reasonable based on what the outcome is that we want from him, and then kind of get a recommendation from you, like, what do we do now? So we live in the Midwest, we live in Iowa, and I've not been able to find a trainer that's been helpful, if you will.
Okay.
So I did send you a photo of our dog. He's the mutt. So he's a 5-year-old terrier mix that we got from the shelter. And we're the third owners, okay? So when we got him, he was already reactive. He's a reactive dog, and that's our big problem right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've watched a lot of your videos on reactivity, and I know you got a lot of background in behavior, and that's what we've got. I've got a problem with the behavior. So we've had him almost 2 years, and I immediately got him into obedience, which was not good. I had to pull him out because as soon as the dogs moved, he went crazy.
Okay.
Then I got a behaviorist and we did some one-on-one. The behaviorist told me that it would take 6 months and we put him on fluoxetine.
Mm-hmm.
He's on fluoxetine now too. And when we did that, his reactivity was no better after 6 months. So, okay. Well, all she did with us was literally, we just walked around Home Depot and that was it. She watched me at Home Depot and she was looking at our relationship and everything. And she gave me a few things to work on. And it was the feed and click type training.
Okay. So you were rewarding him if he did well. So if he
yep.
did something you liked, you rewarded him for that. Okay.
Yep. So he is a dog that he's a little dog, big brain, big dog brain. So he's dominant and he's territorial and he's got a high prey drive and he's got a lot of anxious energy. So on the fluoxetine, it helps him some, but when I stopped with a behaviorist, we took him off of it for a little bit. I don't know how long. And then all training just went out the door. So I put him back on. So right now I've adjusted his dose and he's on for about, it depends and if I can get some success or not. But right now I'm thinking lifetime. So his obedience is really good in the house. So he can sit, he can stay, what I call wait. His recall is okay in the house. Well, it's actually good in the house. And what I call go to your bed, mm-hmm. which you call a place, he's very good at that, probably 90% in the house. We go outside, and depending on the environment we're in, he is very good until we get into an environment where there's people okay. or dogs, whatever, especially the dogs. I live in an environment where he has to be leash walked to go to the bathroom. We live in a townhome development, which I don't know what you guys call it there in New York, but it's a suburb mm-hmm. and it's shared buildings. And we live in the cul-de-sac in the end. And so in my area alone, there's 11 dogs. So there's a lot of dogs and there's a walking path behind us. So there's dogs everywhere and there's people everywhere. So it's not that he doesn't get exposed to all that, but we're in a management state with him because he just is reactive all the time, constantly. So I use right now his loose leash walking manners is depends on the distraction. So I've just changed to what they call a haltie, and that seems to be pretty good with his correction. And then we alternate with a front halter. Sometimes we use the front halter if we're out just walking and potty, and I'll do the, and I know it's going to be busy, I'll do the haltie. Mm-hmm. For recall, I use your Dogtra e-collar. So I just have the new one. And I got it set on a 13 and with a 26 boost. So mm-hmm. I use that frequently for recall when I'm outside. And then I've also tried the prong, the training, the correction training leash thing, the choke thing.
Is it a prong collar?
I've tried a prong collar. I've tried the thing that's just goes around their neck. I think it's just
like
called
a
training.
Like a slip leash?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I've tried that. Gentle leader. So now I'm on the halty, and then we do the click feed method. So that's where we're at.
Okay.
Lots of YouTube videos. He's done a lot of obedience. I've seen the behaviorists. We've done a lot of YouTube, watched a lot of YouTube videos, tried a lot of that stuff. I've been working really hard on his obedience. And so let's see, exercise. We have a squeak ball that he likes to play fetch with, and we do some tug of war, mostly that in the winter. And then I have like a snuffle mat, and then we do like hide and seek. So with the ball, we do like keep away. He likes that.
Yep.
With a squeak ball. So that's what we do. That's about my dog. And so we're at a point now where because he's reactive, we can't really board him. We can't have anybody in the house because he snaps. And so
how does he snap?
So face snap. He'll be fine 1 second and then he's very unpredictable. And okay. then the next thing he'll go close to the face and he'll snap at their face. He's done that twice. So that's where we're at. And we don't really know what to do because we're kind of stuck with this dog. I mean, we can't travel. We can't do anything. So we want to be able to travel and be able to at least board him or maybe have somebody come into the house and watch him. So that's our goals with the dog.
Okay.
And if I can get him 50% better, I'd be happy. But I just don't know what to do at this point. And to be self-regulated would be terrific. But
okay.
We're stuck.
Yeah. Okay, so I would just say that typically in most places, and you might have to drive a little bit, but a lot of places do a no contact boarding facility. So I know there's, some around us, and essentially you drop your dog off and they're in a guillotine in and out system. So they're inside during weather and at night and other things. And then in the morning they come, they open the guillotine, the dog goes outside, they go into the room because the guillotine's shut, they clean the room, and they do the same thing outside. A lot of that's very common in a lot of places. You may just have to drive. I mean, if you live in a very rural place or an area where there's not a lot going on, you have to drive places to get groceries anyway. So it's not, you may have to drive a little bit to find like a no contact situation, but it doesn't sound to me that that is, it may be necessary right now. Okay. But it doesn't, from what you've told me, it doesn't sound like it is long-term necessary if you find somebody who is experienced and knows what they're doing with behavioral cases. But I would just say that anybody who is, because my job is to, my first job is to try to help you as a dog owner become less stressed, to take the weight off your shoulders, because once that can happen, then you can help the dog get better. So I would just say that I know that that's a stressful thing. You feel like you're stuck and you're landlocked and you can't go anywhere. But if you just Googled contactless boarding facilities in your area, you might have to travel a little bit, an hour or so, but you could probably find a place that has that. It's very common. Veterinarian offices have those setups often if they do boarding. So I'll just say that. The other thing is from what you've told me, it seems to me like you don't have, so you kept saying that everything that the dog understands, they actually won't do it outside, or they won't do it in distracted environments.
Yep.
And
he
so
he knows what to do. He's just, it feels like his brain can't do it.
Yeah. Two things. The first thing is it's an obedience. It's an obedience problem, right? So that means here's actually what is happening likely is I want my dog to have advanced obedience, but we don't have the skill sets to do that just yet. So the transition of getting your dog to do things inside to outside is the difference between good and better. Right. So, we have good obedience. We have decent obedience, but you don't have great obedience. So that's a very common problem to have. It would be the same equivalent to playing a sport against somebody who's not that great. Oh, well, they're not that great. So I'll be successful here. This is an easy challenge here. But then when you go against somebody more challenging, you have to get better in order to surpass that opponent, right? So when you're working with your dog outside, that's typically the case. So your skill sets aren't good enough to actually accomplish the goals you want outside. So that's just something that it's a common thread in dog owners. Like almost, I would say at least once a day, I hear that from a dog owner. They say, my dog is great inside, but not outside. And that's frustrating for dog owners because they're like, I don't understand. They know it. We've practiced it. But typically that transition to outside is just too extreme. It's just too much.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
When we inside, he's really good with us in obedience. But Julie said before, when we have somebody over, it all goes out the door. So uh-huh. It's not just outside that's the problem. It's inside too when there's people inside the house.
Yeah, same thing. Same exact thing. All it is a heavier distraction. That's it. So it doesn't matter if it's inside, it's outside, it's at a camping ground. When you have something that's going to challenge your obedience to say, hey, is your obedience okay or is it great? You will fail because your obedience isn't good enough to accomplish your goals. So oftentimes, like you tell your dog to go to their bed when somebody comes over, they're off leash, right? So you say, hey, dog, go to your bed.
Yes. Yep.
Right? Okay. I can tell you right now, if you ask your dog to do something off leash, with a heavy distraction, your obedience has to be supreme. Super good, right? Somebody comes into your home, into their home, and you tell your dog, go away. You have to have supreme, excellent, amazing obedience to be able to do that. And you likely don't. Most people do not. So to your point, Dan, a lot of people go through the process of, so don't look at it as necessarily an environmental thing. Look at it as how challenging is it to the dog? And so again, if you don't have great off-leash obedience, you're not going to be able to accomplish that goal ever unless you start working on that advanced obedience, right? So there is mandatory, absolute must-have practices in dog training. Not very many, but for an example, when you're working on a new behavior, doesn't matter what it is, down, play, sit, roll over, play dead, go to your bed, doesn't matter. When you're establishing these behaviors, what you have to do is you have to incrementally build these behaviors up. So you have to get, okay, we're getting good, we're getting better, we're getting really good, now we're getting excellent, now we're getting master level stuff, right? So there's three levels of obedience, 1, 2, and 3. 3 is Yoda, off leash, do anything, no matter what. And so what a lot of people do, such as yourself, is they get really frustrated because they're going, man, Tom, like, you know, when we have people over, our dog just doesn't listen. And I'm sitting there looking at the situation. I go, your dog's off leash. How much off leash training have you done? Well, yeah, either sometimes, a lot of times it's like, well, we haven't. Sometimes it's, well, we have outside, out back, and it's 50-50. But the reality is you're asking your dog to do something that they are not prepared for and they've never been acclimated to. So of course they fail every time. And you're sitting there scratching your head going, I don't understand. When nobody's around, you'll go to your bed completely fine and you'll get a treat and everything's great. Okay. But the moment you add some defense, it's like shooting on an empty goal. Every single time I shoot on an empty goal, I can make it. I'm so good at this. You put a defender in there and boom. Now you have a little bit of defense, a little bit of pressure, and it's not as easy. And so now you have to practice this new challenge, right? So I just wanted to give you perspective on that what you're saying to you absolutely is probably really frustrating. But to me, your engine isn't starting because you simply don't put gas in it. It's like the sky is blue. You haven't established your skill sets yet to accomplish the goals that you're frustrated about. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yep.
So
I'm
it's
willing
a,
to do whatever.
Okay, yeah, great. That's good. So what you should be doing is really working on you really want to work on establishing your what your goals are, right? So let's say, okay, what's your dog's name?
Tucker.
Tucker. Okay. So let's say, okay, just example. When people come over, we want Tucker to go to their bed and stay. Okay. So what you do is you practice in the house on the leash. The leash is your training wheels. If you are not super confident that your dog is going to do well off leash, then you have to put your dog back on the leash, right? So training wheels. They put go back onto the training wheels, right? Like you push it, you let a kid go and they're falling. Okay, back on the training wheels. So your goal here is making sure that everything that you practice is really done in increments. So put your dog on a leash, work on the place, good place, stay. You pay the dog. Place, good stay, whatever. You're practicing. And then maybe Dan goes around back, ding dong. Tucker goes, somebody's here. Place, nope, correction. Go to your place. So you have to incrementally walk them through the process. You have to incrementally build them to the goal, right? You have to almost hold their hand and help them through the process, okay? And once you do that, the dog will understand those limits and those boundaries and the things that are acceptable, not acceptable, right? And you're doing this all with your leash on. And you could use what you want to do is use whatever collar you have is effective, right? I should say. So when you're using your equipment, you want to make sure that you're using something that's effective. So if your gentle leader is working or your halter is working, that's great. If you want to use your slip or a prong collar, whatever, and we can talk about that later on, but you want to make sure you go tucker, go to your bed, go to your place, whatever. They go there, good place. You hold the leash. Okay. Somebody comes in, the dog jumps off the place. Correction. Right now you don't have that. You say place. It may take you a couple times for him to get there. Once he gets there, then you say, okay, stay. And then you go into the door and then he's off. So you failed. And now you're scratching your head going, I don't understand. When I placed him 20 minutes ago before this person came in, he did great. But now he's not. And you're thinking in your head, and I know, Julie, you kind of said this out loud, like, he knows this. I don't understand. He may know it, but knowing it with pressure and knowing it just with nothing going on are two different things, right? So you have to get back down to kind of the drawing board a little bit and say, okay, we need to put him back on a leash and we need to walk him through this. So just to recreate it really quickly, Tucker, go to your place, any behavior. You can copy and paste this literally in anything. Healing, outside, engagement, Tucker, place, on leash, motivation, right? So you have food, you have treats, whatever, if you're doing your clicker. And just to give you context on the click and feed, all that is positive reinforcement. So all you're doing is when the dog does well, we pay the dog, which every single trainer should be doing. You're just using a clicker as a cue to say you're capturing that was the thing that you did right. I just use the word yes instead because I'll lose a clicker. But so let's just say Tucker place, click, pay. Good. Okay. Stay. Somebody walks in. But typically what I do is I even go slower than that. I'll say, hey, go knock on the door. Bonk, bonk, bonk. Barrr, he starts barking, jumps off his place. Correction, back to place. Now your correction, if it's not effective and the dog doesn't care about it, you're going to be battling. He's going to get off. You're going to put him back on. He's going to get up. You're going to get him back on. He's going to get off. He's going to get back on. So at that point, you're just holding the dog back. You're not actually training. You don't want to do that. You don't want to go down that road. It's not a good idea. So what you want to do is correct the dog the moment that they jump off, right? So the timing of as soon as the dog goes off the bed or puts his two hands off the bed, two paws off the bed, you correct. Nope. So you don't want the dog to get fully off, right? You don't want to get him fully off the bed and then put him back on. You want to correct him the moment that the dog gets off the bed, right? That tries to get off the bed. So you're catching. So it's important to just catch that correction before it gets to. You want to catch the correction before the dog gets fully off. So then you don't have to reset the whole thing. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So after you do that, then you're able to establish. I want you to stay here. Well, first of all, here's where I want you to go. I want you to stay here no matter, yeah, but there's somebody at the front door. I must go investigate. I must go check their IDs. I must go bark. I must, nope. Stay is stay. And this will only work if your stay is good, right? Because sometimes I get into this situation with dog owners and they don't even have a good stay. So the moment they put their dog into a place and they tell the dog to sit and they tell the dog to stay, even without somebody being at the front door, ringing the bell or knocking, the dog stays for 2 seconds and then gets off. And then you have to back up even more. Okay, go back. So if you can't ask your dog to do a behavior and stay for more than 30 seconds without correcting the dog, nope, wrong. There's absolutely almost a zero chance that you're going to ask your dog to place and stay when you can't even get the dog to place and stay without distractions, right? So these are all things.
He can.
Okay, perfect.
He can, yeah.
So you'll do the place, stay, place, sit, stay, however you do that. And then you just start working on, again, the distractions, right? Knocking on the door, ringing the bell, fake greeting. We do that a lot in dog training. Hey, how's it going? Come on in. Nobody's there, but you're working on this greeting. And these are the things that you want to start to establish to really help guide a simple and easy roadmap for the dog to understand very clearly that they have to go to their place. And when they do go to their place, they do have to stay. And if they do get off, there's a correction for getting off. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So that's just like part of the issue. So same, it's the same exact principles when you go outside. So, like when you're working on heel and when you're working on other things, you have to make sure that you're really tackling the very basics. Okay. So as you're, and again, making sure like you will know if the equipment you're using is not effective once the dog is continually breaking the place and you constantly have to either put them back or correct the dog. So each time that you do that, you'll have to like, you know, go up the ladder of, you know, halty or slip leash or prong collar. And really the answer to most people's question of like, well, what should I use is whatever's effective, whatever is safe and effective for your dog to, understand, right? So if you're constantly pulling the dog back up with the halty or the slip, move to the prong. You could even use to the e-collar if you wanted, depending on how you've introduced it. And so that would be my recommendation for that, just to start building that kind of frustration of my dog listens inside but not outside. So as a general rule, what that means is your dog understands basic obedience in a non-distracted environment, and you haven't done the fundamental incremental buildup to the next level of obedience just yet, and that's why you're failing.
Okay.
So that's the first step. Now, as far as what you were saying before about, you know, your issues when you're out, right? So you get a reactive small terrier dog that gets pretty feisty. Why don't you walk me, because that's like the third thing that you guys were struggling with outside of the obedience, and it's probably going to come back to the obedience anyway, but walk me through the process in which let's just give context here. How do you handle this situation and what typically goes on here?
So in the beginning, when I had the behaviorist, we did the click and feed method.
So you paid the dog when he did good, right?
Yeah, well, here's how they kind, yes and no.
Okay.
So you get the, let's just say it's a dog, because it's dog, people, open air, and vehicles.
Okay.
That's his main thing. And it's face-to-face. So if they're face-to-face, he's going to go off. I can get him to walk behind if it's outside of his bubble. But if it's in his bubble, forget it. If it's more than one dog, forget it. But how they trained me on the click and feed was you keep him outside so he's not reacting, right? Keep him outside what I'll call his bubble. And let him see the distraction and just click and feed and click and feed until the distraction's out of sight. So I've done that. That wasn't all that great. Then that was with a halty, right? So not the halty, I'm sorry. That was with a gentle leader. I didn't like that. So now I've got the halty. What I do is we will, what I call just managing the behavior. So we will walk and see a dog, and we will avoid this dog. We'll flip around so he knows the turn. I think you've introduced that a lot in your videos. We do the turn. I will click and feed him. Sometimes I will do a hand toss or a food toss in the grass. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not. Sometimes I can pass, sometimes I can't. I'll put the food in my hand and have him follow me. Sometimes we can do it, sometimes we can't. I will actually, once we turn around, whether we go left or right, it doesn't matter. I will have him follow me with the food, but we end up just avoid, we leave, we avoid it. So to me, that's just managing behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take him out on leash. I take him out on non-peak times too. So as there's not as much distraction around. So I know right now we're pretty much avoiding it because what I've done hasn't really worked. I tried the e-collar with the reactivity, but to get close enough, and what's hard is I know his behavior. I know when he's going to go off. I can see it in his body language. But what's hard is, okay, so he gets to that point, and I buzz him. I'll call it that. I'll buzz him, and he doesn't care. It's just like, I don't care. It's there. I want it, and I'm going to start lunging and barking, and then it's just after that, it's crazy. To try to keep him below threshold is at that point is impossible. So right now I just keep him away. I mean, I'm at that point right now. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what your other trainer kind of set you up for,
right?
Is that's the only thing that you're able to do with that type of training, unfortunately, is pay the dog when they do well. But that doesn't help you because the moment the dog refuses food, gets full, gets overweight, gets fat, and you are actually faced with another dog close by because you actually walked your dog instead of just standing somewhere, that goes out the window.
Right.
So a lot of people, unfortunately, deal with that. It's a kind of an epidemic in our country, unfortunately, that so many people are getting scammed by this type of training. But and to be fair, you know, I don't know this person or anything, and a lot of behaviorists aren't really trained and actually they're not practitioners in training. They understand behavior, they know how to diagnose, and that's kind of their jam. But if they're not upfront with you to just say, hey, I have my limitations here, I'm going to be able to teach you how to reward your dog when they do something good, and then at that moment you can just say, hey, I actually don't need to teach my dog what to do. I need to teach them what not to do. And then there,
that's
you guys,
exactly.
Yeah, they don't yeah. do. Yeah. A lot of people don't do that. Then that's where you part ways. You know, it's like going to a restaurant and saying like, hey, I want seafood. And they go, we don't serve that. Okay, well, we'll just leave now. Like it's a lot easier to just do that. Right. So
yeah, we did. We left $2,000 later. We left.
Yeah. It's a shame, but furthermore, let's move on. So here's what you can start unraveling here. So a couple things. First things that you want to do, a lot like what we talked about before. I work on this with my personal dog myself. I have a very reactive, prone animal. He is a super protective, intact, one and change year old. He's a little over one, and he is prone to be reactive. He came to me reactive at 8 weeks. That's his breed. That's his personality. That's why I got him. I want him to be a protective, reactive dog, to be honest. However, that should only turn on when appropriate, right? So I need to be able to have an off switch. So things that I've done to thousands of clients all over the world as well, has worked on some sort of skill sets that help us manage these situations. And so one of the things that I've done with Burley, my personal dog, is I've worked on a focus command, which is really helpful. So I'm just going to go through some things, and then we'll...
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
We'll go over some feedback. But the first thing is just when the dog, you practice the focus command in your home, right? So again, like what you've already done, I want to teach you this behavior and then hopefully be able to go out and apply it. And so kind of like what your click and treat, right? So you're paying the dog. So what I do is I work on the focus command, which is look at my face. Okay. Look at me. I have videos on that on my YouTube with my puppy stuff. It's in my puppy stuff. And we're actually putting a video out on that this weekend on YouTube as a full length. It's like a 20-minute video. So that's free and that'll be on there. But what we're doing is we're working on look at me. Okay, click tree. In your case, look at me, click tree. For me, it's look at me, yes, pay. Right? So the dog knows, oh, when you say look or focus or what, it doesn't matter what you say, cotton candy, whatever. The dog looks at you and then they get paid. What's going to happen is you're going to run into realistic things, right? So if a dog isn't barking at you, it's going to be very difficult for a dog, especially a dog that has reactivity, to say, okay, I'm going to look at you instead and not and disregard this other dog. If your look is really good, you can fairly go through the situation with correcting the dog once they look away. I typically start to lean into other skill sets outside of the look, but if you can have a good look and your payments are really motivating to the dog, which means I work with a lot of people who pay their dog with like little cheap biscuits. I use 100% beef liver, like freeze-dried. Yeah, good.
He likes hamburger, beef, whatever. We use it all.
Good. So keep them on you, right? So you say focus, the dog looks at you, you pay. You can do the food luring, which is what you've done before, but it kind of puts you into a new neighborhood. It doesn't really help the problem, right? Like you said, it's avoidance. What I like to do is what I call constructive avoidance, which is essentially asking the dog to do something like a skill set, right? So I'm like, hey, look at me, and then you get paid. So I'm not just shoving food in the dog's face like a Pez dispenser and pretending like the dog is getting over his feelings about other dogs. That's not real. Because once the food goes away, you're kind of screwed. So, as you know. So what I like to do is do what I call constructive avoidance. Look. Yes. Good. If the dog looks away, correction, right? That's part of some of the things that you're missing is once the dog says, okay, I'm over this, the correction or just the consequence of just saying, I know what you want, I'm not going to do it, are non-existent, right? So the worst case scenario for your dog, from what you've told me so far, is you're just going to ask them again or you're going to leave. And so they kind of win because they're like, this type of behavior makes me leave, right? So that's one option is the look and then pay. It's super helpful if you have a dog that's heavily food motivated like mine is. I can pretty much walk him through fire and he will look at me as long as he knows he's getting paid at the end of it. The context on that is if there's a dog super close or if there's an off-leash dog running around, he's not going to look at me. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him. His instinct is, yeah, I know what you said, Dad, but I want to keep safe. I got to watch this dog because they're unpredictable. They're off leash, they're lunging, they're getting close, et cetera. And that's where I use a lot of other skill sets, right? And that's the cool thing about my training exercises, methodology, whatever you want to call it, my programs, my training protocols, is I have a Swiss Army knife. Like I have 10 different things we're going to put in 30 seconds to see what fits. And most oftentimes one of them will fit and be successful. And then from there, that's the thing that you focus on. So for me, there's the look, and then if that's not applicable or realistic, I start working on a leave it command, which is the dog looks, doesn't lunge, doesn't bark, doesn't freak out, right? So that's what I do. I allow my dog to do that sometimes too, because I do kind of similarly to what your behaviorist was telling you before she took all your money without results, is I do at some point want the dog to start associating themselves in a confident, calm, rational thinking way. I do want that. I don't want to just say, don't look, don't react. I also do want to try to actually build the dog's confidence around these other dogs. So I do want to counter condition. I want the dog to actually change how they emotionally respond to other dogs so they can ultimately and sustainably get over their feelings, if you will. So they just don't react. You don't need to leave it. You don't need a look. You don't need food. You don't need tools. The dog goes, oh, there's a dog. I don't care. But to your point, he came to you reactive. He's probably going to stay reactive. So that's not really on the table for you, probably, like most people, including me. Because some dogs are just, they just are, you know, they're all bark and no bite, right? They're like, yeah, I don't really know what to do here. So I like to use like a leave it command. But again, you have to, anything that I tell you and that you're working on by yourself has to be done kind of in a clinical environment, like a very sterile, nothing like teaching, right? Because you don't want to try to teach something new in reality, right? That's not going to work. It's like throwing somebody on stage with a guitar and saying, learn how to play guitar. It's like, no, not going to work. So when you're teaching these types of things, leave it for an example. You can do this with food inside. You can do it with toys inside. You can do it with anything that the dog really likes inside. So what you do is you get your equipment on. And again, use something that the dog cares about, something that you don't have to pull the dog back and forth with. You say, leave it. You correct with the collar. The dog says, that was uncomfortable. I don't want to do that again. You go, perfect. So when I say leave it, you can't lunge for this. You can't go for this. You can't try to take this, right? And sometimes we just use the dog's favorite food or treats or beef liver or steak or whatever in a bowl. And we start working on leave it. We go towards the bowl. The dog lunges. We say, leave it. We correct the dog. We work around the bowl. The dog lunges, leave it. Within 5 minutes, the dog knows when you say leave it, they have to recluse and move away from the object, and then they get paid from you, period.
So in the house, he can do that like 95% of the time.
Good.
In the house. He will leave it until I release him. It's just outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've tried it outside, yeah.
Okay, so I understood. So typically, the main reason why, if a dog knows a behavior really well, there's two reasons. I went over the first one, but that's secondary. Typically, if a dog knows a behavior really well and you believe in that, right? Then when you go outside and you say leave it and he flips you off and says nope, it's because the lack of accountability if the dog disobeys you is probably not fair to him. And what I mean by fair is, him reacting is obviously making your life very stressful and his. It's actually landlocking you into a point where you're spending all this money trying to figure out what to do. So when you say leave it and he says nope, and your accountability, your correction, your discipline, however you want to phrase it, is not effective for him, then you're wasting your time. And so you have to find something. And here's the caveat to this, is you can say, I've used the prong collar, I've used the e-collar, I've used the gentle leader, I've used the harness, I've used the gentle, all these things. I can't think of a dog that has ever actually ignored all the pieces of equipment that were made to correct dogs and hold dogs accountable. And what that means is there's a significant high chance that your timing and or the way that you're correcting the dog and or the fitting of the equipment that you're using is incorrect. If one of those things is off, it will not work. And likely it is. Because if your timing is on and your collar is fit to the way that it should be, and the dog really understands it and they care about it, everything will fall into place. So for an example, when you go out and your dog starts to, we'll talk about dismantlement in a moment. Let me just address this. When you say leave it to the dog, if you are pulling the dog's chest back and pulling them back into position, there's a 98% chance that the dog is still looking at the thing, not listening, and they don't even look back at you. So you say,
yeah, that's him.
Okay. So that means the punishment, the consequence, the accountability that you're providing to the dog if they don't listen is not effective, right? I'm going to go rob a bank and get $1 million in cash. The worst case scenario for me is the cop is going to sit outside and bat his little thumb at me and go, bad boy. I'm like, cool, I'm going to take the money, right? Versus a shootout, the rest of your life in jail, and obviously a criminal record. Like, no, so my point is the punishment that you're providing and the clarity, most importantly, isn't clear. And so that's very common, right? So I would be switching to alternative methods of correcting the dog. And the conversation I typically have with dog owners here, regardless of what experience you've had, is you have to really look at the quality of life of your dog and you, right? Because the next question is like, and I know that you guys aren't opposed to correcting your dog. You have all the equipment to do that. You're probably just not 100% doing it correctly just yet. But the amount of stress and discomfort that the dog finds reacting to these dogs is at a level 10, right? They can't even walk down the road without saying, I need to kill you, or I need to freak out, and I need to put myself in such a state of mind of stress every time I see a dog or maybe a person I don't know. That is a very low quality of life, as you know,
yes,
for you and the dog, which is awful, right? So once you start correcting the dog to a point where they care about it, and it there's a difference between discomfort and pain, right? So when we are providing discomfort for the dog, we are simply saying, every time that you do this, this is going to happen. It's an aversive. The point of an aversive is to keep us safe, right? We see flames and we feel heat. We move away. That's our brain going, danger, danger, danger. So when we correct the dog, we say, leave it. And the dog says, nope, I'm going after this dog who doesn't even know that I'm here. My point is it's an unwarranted reaction. The dog lunges. We correct them and say, leave it. They go, oh, that was very uncomfortable. I didn't like that. You go, perfect. Now we're talking. Every time that you do this and you fly off the handle and act like you're going to kill another dog for no reason whatsoever, it's going to be uncomfortable for you. Dogs are smart enough because they're animals, and just like humans, I'm not going to put my hand into this fire because it's going to hurt, or it's going to be uncomfortable, or it's going to be aversive, or it's going to be long last, whatever, right? So the point is once the dog does the behavior that we don't want, the correction has to matter to the dog. And ultimately, the sustainability and the health mentally and physically for both of you of the dog will immediately appreciate and get better, and the value of your relationship will ultimately get better. And so there's a really good chance that the correction you're using right now is just not effective. So I would really suggest going back to the drawing board on that. And the process in which knowing the, so if you're going to use a prong collar, which is, in my opinion, the safest collar to use for a dog that pulls and lunges, because it distributes pressure evenly around the dog's neck instead of just crunching their organs in the front of them and their harnesses and their halties. And of course, it's not, it's effective, right? And so it's distributing that pressure. But most people don't fit the prong collar properly. So you want to make sure that the prong collar is sitting right behind the dog's ears, and it's not loose enough where you can just fit it over the dog's head. You should be able to pinch it together. That's why they call them a pinch collar. You're pinching the prongs together to fit the collar properly. And the other thing is, people say, okay, yeah, it's fit properly. It's sitting nice and snug right behind the dog's ear. It's a great fit. The other thing is timing. So if you are trying to correct the dog so it's like putting out a fire when it's already ablaze versus putting out a fire when you start to see smoke. Okay. So, and here's where dismantlement comes in. This is where your obedience comes in. So for me, if I have a really good down and I have a really good heel, no matter how my dog thinks, acts, or wants to act or wants to do, they likely won't react because they're in a down. Or they're in a heel. Very rarely do I get a dog, it's happened like once in my career, that will bark excessively and react by being in a perfect heel. They walk right next to you and they bark at the other dog. They don't lunge, they're just barking. That doesn't usually happen. They usually fly. So again, okay, Dan and Julie, how good is Tucker's heel? It would be, well, and I already know the answer. Inside it's great, outside it's not, right? So it's a common theme of really expanding your obedience to other levels and layers into your life. And so the way that you do that is you go back down to the drawing board and you say, hey, I'm going to heal you from here to here in a non-distracted environment. And in this case, because you guys have already done all this training, you should just do it in your driveway or out in your side yard. And I know that you live in a kind of a community type thing. Get into a location where you're not going to be hit with a bunch of distractions and definitely dogs. And you start working on it. You say, Tucker, heel. You move forward. He's on your left side on a loose leash. The moment that he crosses your legs, you correct the dog. Correction. Snap. Boom. Click. Right? Bang. Hey, So what you're doing is you're disrupting his state of mind and you're disrupting his physical momentum moving forward. Don't pass me. It's like the old game of operation. Wrong. The moment he crosses your leg, he gets a correction. You move forward. Tucker heel. He goes into a heel. The dog is staying on a nice loose leash. He's paying attention to you. He's engaged. Good heel. And you click and pay. Good. And you restart. And the idea is get a very, very, very clear understanding of heel means loose leash next to me. The moment you cross, you get corrected. Doesn't matter if there's dogs, hippos, lions, or other people. This is what heel is. And if you fundamentally have a really good heel, it's kind of like a program system. Same thing with the down command. Tucker down. Okay, well, there's squirrels and birds and chipmunks and et cetera. Well, that's just, your obedience isn't good enough. So, hey guys, you're trying to enter the Tour de France and you've never been on a bike. This isn't going to work. You have to learn how to do the principles first to then get to the next level. So the same thing, what I do with my dog is I put him into a down. I say down, boom, he goes into a down. He's looking at the other dog, he's watching. I pay him good down and then I move on. That's another thing that I have in my toolbox that's helpful if the focus doesn't work. And I have a disadvantage because the reason why I down him is because he's 160 pounds of pure muscle. He's like a gorilla. So if he does want to break his heel and lunge, because he's not perfect, he has a lot of momentum and a lot of leverage. So I'll just put him into a down. I want all of his ligaments on the ground and take away his strengths. And then I'll correct him the moment he starts to rise up. So I have all the advantages there. You don't necessarily have to do that because you have a smaller dog and this is a lot more manageable. So you have to fundamentally work on your heel, because if you have a really good heel, technically, you should have absolutely zero problems being around other dogs because your dog's not going to break the heel. But again, most people who have fearful or reactive dogs don't have these behaviors. They don't have a good heel. They don't have a good down. They don't have a good sit. And what I mean by that is they don't have these behaviors that they can apply in reality. So a lot of people say, Tom, you guys have too, but when you're in front of me, it's a little different because my humor you can judge that I'm joking, but also kind of serious. Is people say my heel, my sit, my place, my leave it, everything is good inside, but not outside. I said, so what good is it? Who cares? If you have like the best trained dog in the entire world, but you can't do anything outside, what good is that? It's not, right. It's really, you add one little thing of one little spice of reality and everything goes down the drain. It's like, well, that's kind of pointless. I can't really apply this anywhere. So the other thing is your dismantlement, which is, I think you said, Julie, in our earlier conversation, is inside turns, outside turns, and kind of like these drawback recalls, right? So you have the leave it, you have the focus, you have the heel, you have the down, and then you have your body handling, which can diffuse situations very effortlessly if you catch it first. Because a lot of people, what they do, guys, is they see another dog, so they see the trigger. You're out for a walk, you see the trigger. You see it sometimes before the dog does, or you see the person. And what you do is you start to wait for the dog to build. So you see the smoke signals and you just say, I'll just wait for it to be a big fire before I start putting water on it. What I like to do is be proactive instead of reactive to the situation. So I don't want to be reacting to his building and his huffing and puffing and his hackles and his growling and his barking. I want to say, hey, there's a trigger that might trigger you. Let's do a little bit of work. Inside turn, heel, focus, down, stay, etc. So that's another big part, guys, to your training, is making sure that your timing, don't wait for the dog to be at the end of the leash barking hysterically and falling on themselves and freaking out. You want to start going, hey, I'm starting to see these smoke signals. Let's find the ashes and start to put it out before it gets any bigger.
I do try to be proactive with it, but what we are up against in our area is that if we're out in the neighborhood walking him, there can be a dog across the street. And a lot of people say cross the street, the dog won't do it. Well, mine does. Mm-hmm. So I do, but I also try to practice getting closer and trying to, I'm still trying to train him. I guess that's, it's not always that he's, you know, being reactive because it's too close for him. But I want to keep working with him. So that's the only time that I run into that is when I'm really trying to work with him. You know, I get this halty, this new halty, and I think, okay, that'll help me with the correction. And it does, but he doesn't care. He just doesn't care.
Well,
it's like,
yeah,
he's not afraid. He just wants what he wants. You know, he's very high anxious. He's very anxious energy is what he's got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And exactly. And I mean, you know your dog and that's it. Like, right. Like the dog is saying like, hey, I'm anxious and I'm nervous. But here's the thing is the gentle leader or even the halty kind of has this, I'm a big fan of whatever works. If you came in and said, Tom, I use apples. I said, great. Let's start cutting apples. I don't care. Like my job is to help everybody. I don't care how you do it. I just have been doing this long enough to say, here's the things that have worked. Here's the things that have not worked. Right. I mean, if I don't have this, you know, gatekeeping ideology to say, well, I can only do this because this is my emotions. It's no. I just want to help people. Right. So my point is I've accumulated this information to know that like if a gentle leader is going to be easier for you. It's going to be safer and maybe easier for you to hang on. So it feels like you're controlling him more, and maybe you are. But the problem is it doesn't correct the behavior. It just makes it safer for you to hold on to the dog. So you have this false kind of narrative in your head. Like when he pulls and lunges because he's a smaller dog, you feel like you have more physical control, which you probably do, versus a tie back, flat back harness or a flat collar, or even maybe a slip collar, but it's not correcting the actual behavior. So what you're doing is you're rewarding the behavior when he does something right, but you have absolutely no problem teaching him what you want him to do. The biggest issue that you have and tons of other dog owners have, and they go down this same route of doing something who only teaches the dog what we want them to do. That's the by definition, that's the only thing they're doing is teaching what we want the dog to do. And you're going to go, no. I get that. I need to teach the dog what I don't want him to do. This isn't going to work. So your corrections, I would really start to fine tune. And it's kind of a longer conversation, but my recommendation, because of your limited resources to training in person, is my online academy is like $40 a month. And you could do it for 1 month, you can do it for 2 months, it doesn't matter. But my point is you can send in footage to my staff to say, hey, here's a video of Tucker reacting. Here's a picture of my prong collar placement and sizing. Here's the leash I'm using. Here's the timing of everything. And so if you want like this feedback loop, it's a very, 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 I mean, it's $150 an hour just to talk to people on the phone, my staff, right? It's double that to talk to me, as you know. And you can pay $40 a month and send in a video every day to my staff and they'll tell you, hey, timing's off. Hey, prong collar is too low. Hey, leash is too long, etc. So it sounds to me like you just, I mean, I think you know what you need to do, but you need coaching from here.
Yeah, I would say I do. That's why I'm talking to you.
Yep. So again, you have to go back down to you have to go back down to your basics and make sure that you have these things. Like again, don't give your dog so much freedom if they're making mistakes. If they are constantly making mistakes, they probably have too much freedom. So put them back on a leash, especially inside. And when you go outside, again, I would switch back to if you were in front of me right now and I said, okay, we are outside and I want you to heel Tucker from here to here. There's a good chance you're not going to get great engagement. And if you stopped, he's going to keep going. Like I want a dog when I stop, they look back and scoot right back into place. You have engagement.
Well, I can tell you what he would do. He'd be barking and lunging at you.
Okay. All right. And then if you corrected him for it, he probably wouldn't stop because your correction isn't effective, right? So that's a big problem, right? Like it sounds like you've learned all the things and how to reward your dog to do the things you want. You just haven't figured out how to stop the things you don't, which is a lot of people's problem. And so you have the tools, it sounds like, but now are you using them right is the next question, which is, I wouldn't know that unless you sent in some footage. And that's why I think the next step for you guys realistically would be to send in footage to the pro team. And they're my actual trainers at my Upstate Canine Academy location. And they would be able to tell you all the things that you need to adjust and make different. That would be my, okay. It's an easy way to say, okay, let's put the prong back on or whatever, the slip, whatever you feel comfortable with, and let's go out. Let's work on the heel. Let's work on the focus. Let's work on the down. Let's work on the correction before we get to that point. And then, because that's the next step is, okay, you have a good base of what you need to do now for homework, but now we need to see you in action.
Okay. Okay. That sounds good.
Okay.
Can I ask one question?
Of course.
My concern is one of the things that we really want to have happen is, for example, if we want to have people over, you know, I understand and what you've said about, you know, if we're not doing correcting correctly or whatever, if we get him to the point where he listens perfectly, he goes to his bed when we tell him to, he does everything we want to, he's still inside thinking, okay, I see that person over there, I want to kill him. Mm-hmm. You know, that if we are able to train him perfectly, is he going to get rid of that fear of people or that desire to bite them?
Probably not. But that's not realistic either. You know, so my point is it's not fair for you, for yourself or for the dog to also have that goal. Because, and let me tell you, Dan, that it's possible, but it's not likely. Because if a dog's, because you're starting to start to get into personality, genetics,
right?
So if a dog doesn't like new people, it depends on why they don't like new people. Will answer the question on, can they get better with new people? If they have trauma, or again, their genetic disposition is to not like new people, right? Then you're going to be playing this management game. But for me, Dan, like, you know, I have dogs and I have people over all the time. I have two kids, we have grandparents, and, you know, people are over all the time. And so for me, like, my dogs are friendly, but sometimes they're in the way and they're a lot and they're big. And they're knocking things over, and it's this thing. I put them outside. I put them in a crate. I put them in a place. I put them in a down. So I still have to manage my dogs, even though their behavior and their temperament is good and not worrisome or aggressive. And so don't try to chase. It's hard to say over the phone, Dan, because I would need to see Tucker and say, oh, this is actually 100% fear. But here's the thing, is if you said, and you did, hey, he randomly will unpredictably bite people. Okay, then again, too much freedom. You're not going to go near our guest. You're not going to go near new people. And you're certainly not going to go near them and near their face, because we know what you're going to do. Can you change that? Maybe. But at the risk of what? Your guest getting snapped at? Not really something that anybody really wants to go through. So for me, I go, okay, you know, if a dog doesn't like another dog, I don't force them. I don't need them. I just want neutrality. Hey, Tucker, I want you to go to your bed and you're going to stay there. Nobody go near Tucker. Or Tucker, go to your crate. Here's a bone. Take a nap. Relax. Tucker, go out back. See you later. You don't have to. And I know that you don't think this, but sometimes dog owners think sometimes that they have to have this dog like new people in order to be successful. And the reality is some dogs' personality isn't, they're not going to, you know, if you don't like a certain food, you're not going to like it. You're not going to change me. I don't like it, right? My taste buds don't like that, right? It's in my brain. I don't like this, right? So my recommendation is to work on your obedience and control what you can, which is your dog. You can manage all of that. Place instead. I would much rather be around a level 3 Yoda aggressive dog than a out of control puppy that's in my face scratching me and biting me all day long.
Right.
Because I know that dog's not going to move and I don't have to worry about it. So just kind of think about those things as you move through this training. Is right now you have a lose-lose. You have a dog that doesn't listen when people are over and also maybe doesn't like people. You're lose-lose. So no matter how you cut it, it's kind of a stressful situation. Versus, you have a dog that listens to everything you say, no matter if the zoo walks through the door, and you can control the situation. That's much easier. Somebody comes in over-announced, your dog starts freaking out. Tucker, go to your bed. Zoom, down. Doom, stay. Doom, 30 minutes later, oh yeah, Tucker, let's go out back, right? You don't have that. So you need to start really working on your foundation first. Because even if you said, hey, Tom, Tucker, and I deal with this all the time, guys, is, oh, my dog loves new people, and you know, but unfortunately, you know, he overwhelms kids and he overwhelms my guest, and my aunt is allergic, and my elderly mom, it gets scratched, and it's this whole thing. And it's, so people deal with this on a different end of the spectrum all the time, and it's the same principles. You don't have the skill sets to be able to control your dog in a realistic setting, and therefore you're going to fail. Maybe your dog might not bite somebody in the face, but they're still going to scratch him and lick him and knock him over and make him cry and whatever, you know. So I just think you guys have to readjust your base here and start really working on the management. Is it possible to modify your dog's perception and feelings about other people? Possibly. But I wouldn't be looking for that. I would be looking for the ultimate control so you can eliminate the stress in your life. When you say leave it, we leave it. When you say down, we down. When you say place, we place. When you go to the boarding facility, here's his commands. Tell him to down, he'll down. Tell him to place, he'll place. Tell him to leave it, he'll leave it. Right now, you walk to the boarding center, and you go, hey, here's our dog. He's unpredictable. He doesn't like new people, and he doesn't listen. It's like, okay.
Yeah, they say no, thank you.
Yeah, exactly, right? So the more control, I don't want to say control, but the more communication and clarity you have, and yes, control is in there, the more things you can do, so.
Okay, yeah, the reason I ask that is if something is just Julie and I here, if we, for whatever reason, can't get back to let him out to go to the bathroom and we need a friend to come over, mm-hmm. that's going to be a problem.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So.
Yep. But you got to start somewhere, right?
Like, yeah,
you know, to me as a professional, Dan, I get what you're saying and you're right, but that is down the road. Like you shouldn't even be thinking about accomplishing that yet because you have so much other work to do.
Okay.
So no going on vacation this year.
I think you can. I think if you, like I said, if you called around some vet offices and say, hey, I have a dog, he's kind of weird with new people, do you have a no contact facility? A lot of vet offices do.
Okay.
Look around, you know, make some calls. Google or ChatGPT. Hey, yeah. No contact vet or boarding facilities in my region. You'll probably find some place. You drop them off. They're in and out. They're happy. Nobody touches them. They're fine.
Okay.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, guys. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Welcome. Bye.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a United Healthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about United Healthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.